Doom. Good evening, everyone. Good evening. And welcome to the February 13th pre-Valentine's meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. Do we have consensus on the order of business? Okay, good. Let's move on then to action on the stipulated student discipline agreement. Would someone like to make a motion on that?
I'll make a motion to accept the stipulated expulsion as presented in closed session.
So we have a second by Mr. We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. Assuming there's no discussion since this was a closed session item, all in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Motion. Motion carries 6-0 Mr. Buckman stepping out for a moment. Let's move on to item 5.03, approval of minutes for 12-14-17. I'd like to take a motion on that.
I'll move approval of those minutes.
It's been moved by Mrs. Sheffer and seconded by Mr. Millar. Is there any discussion on those? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to the approval of minutes for 1-11.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
I was absent.
I'm sorry. Okay. So this is for 12-14.
Right.
Okay. So we had a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Millar. Let's try that vote again. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
One
abstention. Okay, there we go. Thank you. Let's move on then to the approval of minutes for 1-11-18, the study session. Would someone like to make a motion on that? It's been moved by Mr. Buckman. I'll second that. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? None. Let's move on to the approval of...
Excuse me? And those are wrong. Those are incorrect. Did they say you were there? There were...
Yes. Okay. So, Mrs. Holmes, can you help me out with this? So, the minutes for 1-11. Okay.
We like to do this when we have a big
I know, yeah, exactly. Mrs. Sheffer is saying we like to do this when we have a large number of people here. So.
Okay.
Okay.
On the 11th.
So, let's try this.
We'll correct those minutes.
Do we have a motion to approve the minutes as corrected, reflecting that Mr. Millar was not in attendance at that meeting? Okay.
I'll
good.
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Motion by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, there we go. Let's move on to the approval of the minutes of 1-16-18, and I know we have several people that will abstain on this one. Would someone like to make a motion for that?
I'll second.
Been moved by Mrs. Rogers, seconded by Mr. Millar. Any other discussion on that? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Yes. Okay. So, 116. I know there were three absences at that meeting. Mr. Buckman was absent, I was absent, and I believe Mr. Millar was absent. Okay. So
I'll
we have
move
a,
approval.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger, a second by...
I'll second.
Mrs. Sheffer. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
I abstain.
We have three abstentions. Okay, thank you.
So much for routine.
Boy. Boy, oh boy.
Showed up for all of them.
Let's do something easy. Let's move on to item 6.01, which is public comment. We have two requests to speak. Remember, we're requiring that the public comment be no more than 3 minutes. At the end of 3 minutes, we'll ask you to finish, and if you're not done, we're going to insist that you finish. So let's start with Lisa Washmuth, who's got some good news for us.
Unless they want to speak later.
Oh, yeah, Lisa, do you want to speak now? Are you good now?
Hi, I'm Lisa Washmuth from San Luis Obispo High School, and I am here. It is FCCLA week, and FCCLA just went to our region competitions, and my president, Maddie Fletcher, is here to tell you about that. It's also CTE month, and today is also Family Consumer Science Educator Day, so we're here on behalf of all of that with Mrs. Carlin, who is finally starting her chapter of FCCLA at Laguna Middle School. And her group made cake pops, and they brought them for you.
Aww. Thank you. Perfect. Okay.
All right.
Okay, let's restart. Let's start the clock again so that Maddie can speak, please.
Hi, so I'm Maddie Fletcher. I'm a junior at SLO High and the president of the SLO High chapter of FCCLA. And this past weekend, we went to the regional competition at Wilcox High School. We had 8 competitors, so we took first, second, and third in fashion design. First in junior interior design, second in wedding cake display, first in child development, fourth in scrapbook, and first in salad prep. All of these competitors will move on to the state level, and they are eligible for scholarships and moving on to nationals there. So I'm very proud of our FCCLA chapter and their performance at the regional competition.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I would just like to say that Mrs. Washmuth shared the wedding cake pictures with me, and it was really beautiful. And this was a sophomore, is that correct?
Yes.
A sophomore, and she did a really, really gorgeous job. And so we're just super excited about the program and about the potential for that. Let's see, we have a request from Jen Lurk. And I'm sorry, I can't pronounce your last name.
That's okay. It's Thai.
Could you tell us your last name so I can get
Lurt
it right?
Lurtwachara.
Okay, thank you.
I'm not Thai. My husband is.
Okay.
Don't start the clock yet.
Oh, we're starting it right now.
Okay. I came tonight because I wrote a letter to the school board about CalCard purchases. And I actually never heard back from the school board, but I did hear back from Superintendent Pinkerton. Mr. Pinkerton repeatedly stressed in his recent blog post, as well as in the letter that he sent to me, that CalCard purchases, and particularly food purchases on CalCards, represent a very small portion of the SLC USD budget. I appreciate what the superintendent is trying to say. However, my concern goes deeper than mere numbers and percentages of budgets. The laxity of CalCard purchase guidelines at the administrative level versus the stringent, almost repressive control over what school sites are permitted to spend indicates to me a double standard. School sites have been told not to spend money on food. This was before the CalCard controversy began. I think some principals were told at the beginning of the school year. The PTA or private donations have been used to buy the cheapest pizza possible for math nights and other parent nights at schools. Teachers traveling to attend a professional development conference were told that they would not be allowed a daily per diem for food because their conference held in Southern California already included breakfast and lunch. They were told to buy dinner on their own dime. Countless times, my children's teachers have spent their own money on classroom supplies, or have asked parents for donations because the monies for what they wanted and needed in their classrooms, just the monies were not there. I've assumed that the administration and school board were stringently following similar guidelines, that we were all tightening the collective belt. Imagine my dismay when I started looking at CalCard bills and the purchases made by the SLC USD leadership. The school board pooled their three per diem meal reimbursements to treat themselves to a $640 dinner at a pricey San Diego restaurant during their recent conference. I assume that the conference they attended did not include breakfast and lunch. At a minimum, I urge the board and administration to look into how teachers have or have not been reimbursed for their costs associated with professional development. It was this pricey dinner, among other CalCard purchases, many lunches, working lunches, that to me illustrated a double standard in action. I was pleased to note that this month's CalCard bill was only $37,000. This represents almost two-thirds the amount of some of the highest bills and at least half of what is normally spent. Think of the savings we might have seen as a school district if these purchases had always been held to the same stringent guidelines that school sites and teachers follow. As we head into a season of massive cuts in our district, we must ensure that two standards are not applied, and that our teachers and thus our students...
Thank you very much.
Welfare comes first and foremost.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to address the board during public comment? Mrs. Neuhauser.
I'd like to follow up on the CalCard. I have also been really concerned about the expenses for food at the district office level. I'm really pleased to see that there's only... It's a little over, I think, $200, maybe $300. There were two expenses this month, one at Fatty's Pizza and one at Mr. Pickles. So the trend is good. You're going down. It's no longer close to $1,000 to $1,300 a month. I know that $45,000 a year doesn't seem like much in a giant budget, but our tax money is designated for students, to benefit students. And when I look at how that $45,000 could have been spent, it could have been spent on after-school clubs. It could have been spent on enrichment kinds of activities that directly benefit our students. And it disappoints me that that money has been spent to have working lunch meetings where you simply go to the tavern and have lunch while you're on this taxpayer dime while you're having a meeting. That doesn't seem right. Especially as we go into falling revenues, this board is going to have to convince the community that you really are good stewards of our money. Los Osos right now is facing huge tax increase with the coming online of the sewer. And to go to them and ask for more money for the schools might be a hard sell, especially if there are these kinds of expenditures. I would also ask you to start taking a look at hotel bills and how many conferences people are going to and how much they're spending on hotel bills. Are they staying in high-rent districts? Are they staying in Motel 6s? I mean, what really are the expenses and what are reasonable expenses from a taxpayer-funded organization? Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that would like to address the board in public comment? Okay. Seeing none, let's move on to correspondence. The board did not receive any correspondence, so we'll move on to item 7.01, student representatives to the board. And who'd like to begin?
Well, good evening, everyone. Teachers, nice to see you here. The nice man who was running the sound a little bit ago told me to open my speech with a nice joke, so I looked one up really quick. Why? And it kind of fits because there's a bunch of teachers here. Why did the teacher have her eyes crossed? Because she couldn't control her pupils. Anyway, my report. So SLO High had a really fun week last week. It was Visual and Performing Arts Week. So we had our band, our choir, and multiple performances during lunch at an open mic. It was really cool to showcase our students who are talented in the music industry, as well as our culinary arts and our ceramics classes and whatnot. So it was really cool seeing all these students being highlighted throughout the week. We ended that week with a film festival on Friday after the girls' basketball game, who won. And at the film festival, Grant Thorshov, who is going to the Tisch School of Arts at NYU next year, won first and second place. So that was, I think, a $350 prize. And then third place went to I will remember in a second. but Grant is amazing, and he deserved those prizes. He made a video about his sister, telling her, who came to high school this year and had the entire theater crying. And on Saturday, there was a sweethearts dance, which was a father-daughter dance or a father-figure dance with little elementary school girls. It was a lot of fun. I got a cool picture of Mr. O'Connor with his daughter, which will be in the newsletter at the end of this week, hopefully. And last week was also Council Appreciation Week. So we throughout the week, we had posters up on the big second story. We wrote cards to our counselors. We got them bagels and stuff. So it was a nice thing to do because they, I think their counselor-to-student ratio is around 300 to 1 or something, which is higher than, actually probably higher than that since there's only three of them. 1,200 or 1,500 divided by 3, 500 to 1. So that's higher than the average. Our counselors deserve all the appreciation they can get. So it was cool doing that. But something that I've never done before at one of these school board meetings is actually bring up problems that are addressed to me. And this week I actually have two. So recently, or actually for the past 4 years, whenever I go home at the tennis courts, many students walk home and cross that street from the tennis courts onto California or California Boulevard. But however, that creates traffic because there's a constant flow of students from 310 to around 325, a constant flow of students crossing that path, which creates a backup of cars all the way to Johnson Street. And multiple students and teachers have brought this to my attention and wanted the school board to address the issue of potentially getting a cross guard to control the flow of traffic there, to have students go in clumps rather than a continuous flow. Because not only does that stop cars and create pollution, it also annoys many people.
Choir? Mr. President, could I ask? Has there been thought given to moving the crosswalk to the other side of the street where you don't have the steady flow of traffic trying to make that left turn?
I mean, that could work as well. Right now, there are students crossing on both sides because some parents park on the further part of San Luis Drive and some students are walking to the bus stop, which is further up the street. And then the second thing is in the principal's newsletter, there was an LCAP survey sent to all parents. And something that was brought to my attention, and I don't really understand the answer, you guys may have the answer, is why the survey was not given to students about the funding of LCAP. I don't see why students shouldn't have a voice in that. I understand that we have presented our students with many surveys, and as a Youth Truth one, but I still feel that students who are passionate enough and want their voice heard should have a say in that survey. We've discussed at the Superintendent Senate about having a student newsletter, and that could have gone in there, but my belief is that students should have taken part in that survey and made aware of it. The only reason I was made aware of it is because my mom tells me everything that's in that newsletter, but I understand that many students don't really check that newsletter, nor do their parents. Other than that, at Slow High, tomorrow, Romeo and Juliet opens in the theater. So that'll be fun. It's set in Rome. So if you guys have a chance to go, 7 o'clock tomorrow and until Saturday. And after this, I'll be running to the courthouse because our mock trial program is in semifinals currently. And if we win today, we will be in the finals on Thursday, where I will be at a defense attorney who is apparently overly aggressive in my opening statement and cross-examine crying witnesses too hard. So if you have time and we make it past semifinals, come to the courthouse at 6 p.m. on Thursday and see Slow High, our undefeated mock trial team, tear it up. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sailor Rossetti, and with me is Maddie O'Donnell, and we're going to be representing Morro Bay tonight. So I'm going to start off with Maddie.
Okay, so first of all, in our classrooms, our Intro to Law class just took an industry tour on Wednesday and visited the SLO Courthouse, the SLO Law Library, a criminal law firm, and the Morro Bay Fire Department. And for sports, our varsity boys wrestling went to CIF individuals Friday and Saturday at Great Oaks High School in Temecula. And our boys wrestling team was undefeated in the LPAL champs and finished the season at 20-2. The team went 5-0 in league duels and won the individual tournament by over 25 points to capture the title. And this is the first time since 2010. And congratulations to Annalise Dempsey for being selected to represent Morabe High as our girls' state delegate, and Kinley Flaherty as the runner-up. Girls' State is hosted by American Liaison, and delegates learn about the structure and responsibilities of state government. One female student is selected from each high school statewide to attend the week-long leadership program at Claremont McKenna High School, or college, sorry. And also what's new at our high school is we now have the Raptor system, which it's part of keeping students and faculty safe and knowing what and who is on our campus. So it allows us to track visitors, contractors, and volunteers in our schools and provide us with a safer environment for our students and staff. So upon entering Morabe High School, visitors will be asked to present an ID, which may be scanned and manually entered into our system. If a parent or a guardian is undocumented for any reason or does not have a U.S. government-issued ID, the school staff member may ask to see another form of identification and manually enter a person's name into the Raptor system to check for sex offender status. The Raptor system will check to ensure that registered sex offenders are not entering our buildings. And the Raptor system only checks the visitor's name and date of birth for comparison with National Database of Registered Sex Offenders. No other data from the ID is gathered or recorded. The system is not connected to any other database, such as the Department of Motor Vehicles, and information is not shared with any outside agency. Once entry is approved, Raptor will issue a badge that identifies the visitor, the date, and the purpose of his or her visit.
So we're going to have an FFA week coming up on the 19th. There will be swing dancing in the quad on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, FFA will hold a Farm Olympics. Thursday, our FFA will be going out to the Los Osos Middle School to recruit some new FFA members. And on Friday, there will be a barn dance from 7 to 9. Tomorrow during lunch, our link crew is having a freshman pizza party with all of the freshmen for Valentine's Day. And then we also have Matchematics going on, which is where ASB will be selling Matchematics all this week, which are questionnaires to find the student's best match. They're given a list of students that they're most similar to, and it's a little survey thing that they fill out. And it's a great fundraiser for Valentine's Day, and we've made a good amount of money with it. So, yes. Thank you.
Sorry, one more thing. It was Chase Doyle that got third place. Chase Doyle, senior.
Let's see, Mrs. Roger and then Mrs. Sheffer.
For the ladies from Morabe High School, on the Raptor project, I understand Morabe has another Raptor project. Are either of you familiar with it? It has to do with seagull eradication. And could you explain it?
I know a little bit about the seagull problem. I know we had a couple birds that were flying over our school to make the seagulls go away. And from what I know is that a few of them died. So the seagulls are back. But that's all I know. but they worked while they were here.
That's an update that I hadn't heard. But my understanding was that there was a falconer who had some hawks, a couple of hawks, that were there at the high school and that were flying around, and that the seagulls, which have been an ongoing problem there forever, had been completely eradicated.
They were completely gone, and now they're back, and it's weird to hear them and see them everywhere.
Oh, I'll have to delve into it. Okay, thank you.
Wow. Okay. Wow. What?
I'll defer until after this presentation.
Okay, let's move on to item number 7.02, Random Acts of Kindness. Mr. Block.
All right. It's my pleasure to be here tonight. Thanks so much for inviting us. First of all, I want to introduce Bennett Mallory. She is a first grader at Bishop's Peak, and I'm taking credit on Bishop's Peak tonight, but this happened outside the school day on winter vacation. But Bennett had the idea, or she had seen on TV, or she had seen somewhere, the story of Corey Iverson, who is a firefighter from the San Diego area that was fighting the fire in the Ventura area. So Bennett had the idea to put a stand together, a hot cocoa stand, and that stand caught fire. She was on the news, in the newspaper, and to date she's raised over $2,600. This weekend, I understand that Bennett and her family are driving down to San Diego to present it to the Iverson family. So that's going to be the culminating event for this. Her parents are here tonight, Brianna and Jacob. They have raised an outstanding young lady. She has family in the room. We have first grade teachers in the room. So Bishop's Peak is extremely proud of Bennett. And Bennett now is prepared to answer a few questions. Is that right? All right. Does anybody have a question?
Bennett, I'd like to know how you got the idea to help.
Because it was Christmas Eve, and most people had their dads for Christmas Eve, and I wanted to give them a Christmas wish.
Board or administration, does anybody have a question about what Bennett did that you'd like to ask?
Mrs. Sheffer.
When you collected all that money, what did you do with it? How did you present it?
That's this weekend.
This weekend.
She's driving this down weekend. This weekend.
And
this
who will you give it to? How will that work? Do you know?
Actually, Iverson.
Who's the wife of Corey who passed away fighting the fire.
I want to thank you very much for doing that. That's important work you're doing.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who'd like to ask a question? Dr. Prater.
Bennett, I just met you tonight, and I just can't say how impressed I am about you and the things that you're trying to do to help other people. So you're a light for all of us. Well done.
And Bennett and her parents and everybody else, we just, you know, want to recognize you for the hard work that you've done and the example that you've set for not only the kids at your school, but all the kids in the school district and everybody who has parents that they love and folks that they really care about. It looks to me like there's a link up there from KSBY. Can we watch that?
That's interesting. Why is it doing that to me? I don't know if it's live. Ah, there we go.
I felt like I was in quicksand.
Video.
A little girl in San Luis Obispo got in the giving spirit on Christmas Eve. Six-year-old Bennett Mallory set up a cocoa and cookie stand at her home on Christmas Eve to benefit fallen firefighter Corey Iverson's family. Neighbors and local firefighters stopped by. So far, Bennett has raised over $1,000 and hopes to hand-deliver that money to Iverson's family. This is getting a lot of buzz online. Mm-hmm. You've been following this story, Kelsey. What are you hearing?
Right. So I talked to the mom of Bennett. Her name is Brianna, and she said that this is all Bennett's idea, 100%. And within 2 hours, they had over $500. So tons of community support of this. And Corey's wife, Ashley, also posted this on her Facebook page saying, "Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart." So it's already made it to San Diego. Someone seeing such a huge act of kindness from this six-year-old girl. Such a sweet gesture.
Pretty amazing. Yeah. Let's finish off with talking about weather and what we can expect for this upcoming week.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Mrs. Sheffer.
I'd like to ask if the board would indulge me. I'd like to have the superintendent's updates now, perhaps, move them up to now, because we have a lot of teachers here who aren't generally, who are home doing what they're supposed to be doing in the work evening and may not be able to hear the updates. They don't take very long. So I thought perhaps we could move those to have them now and then do the 7.03, the teach grants, immediately following. Is that all right with everyone?
Is that okay with the board?
Well, they don't generally take very long, but if there's not support, then we'll do it at the usual time.
Well, I just don't want the teachers to, miss their bedtime. If they promise, Dr. Prater and Ryan promise to be concise,
brief,
then it's okay by me.
Okay. All right. It looks like we have a consensus. So, Mr. Pinkerton, and then Ms. McGrath.
All right, so we'll start off with the business budget update. So I wanted to update the board kind of on what a few of our speakers brought up at the beginning in the public comment section, just for the board to know. So normally in public comment, the board doesn't respond to people. In fact, I think it's kind of the bylaw to not do that unless it's an agendized item. But the issue that's come up is the CalCarts, and so kind of been brought up a few times now. So I did address it in my blog. I did write back and kind of give kind of an overall kind of rundown of how this works and why we have CalCards. So first of all, most things that are ordered in our district are done, that's done through a purchase order. So it's a whole process, paperwork goes through, you set up a business, set up an account type of thing, you pay those methods. And normally those are reserved for things that are over $100 or more. And then the things that are not purchase orders for us are used through CalCards. And so in particular, and they're basically just a credit card. And so the people who have CalCards are the cabinet staff, our maintenance supervisor, our construction supervisor, our head supervisors in those areas. They have CalCards as well. And then predominantly they're used by mostly maintenance workers, ground workers, and our transportation workers. And so a lot of those purchases for the majority of things are anything from going to Home Depot to buy a sprinkler head to going and buying, getting a smog certificate for a car. So, yes, they are used for different types of items. We have used them a lot more, I would say, this year for Amazon purchases. So our Karen Campbell Bright is currently working with our sites at all of our sites to purchase items off of Amazon that are cheaper, basically, kind of being more frugal in terms of how we spend our money to buy things. The Prime accounts, things like that, where it's no shipping charge, is actually something that helps us in terms of purchasing items for the district. So there's the CalCards themselves. So if somebody has a CalCard statement, they have to show their itemized receipts, so everything they purchased. That thing gets signed off by the supervisor. It then goes to our fiscal department to double check those things to make sure that the purchases are correct, and then eventually kind of put forward to the board for approval, basically. So all things that are, they're budgeted, they're within their budget, sites, departments have budgets, they tie into the CalCard items in terms of those. Now, this issue about food has come up recently, over the past 2 months, and we actually, at that time, 2 months ago, I did put something out to staff about being careful about purchasing food, and we actually put the law, kind of the law about what you can buy food for, what you can't, those types of things. Predominantly, a lot of our food purchases are for student events and for teachers, for parent nights, those types of things. In terms of whatever you've heard about a principal, but nothing has ever gone out from this team, from our district, to sites to say that they cannot purchase food for their school sites. So at the beginning of the year, so I'm just telling you, so if that happened, if you can tell me who that is or what principal it was, I'd love to talk to them and find out where that came from. Because it's, as far as I know, that's not the case. I did ask, I think, in my response, in terms of who the principal was, and if teachers were really going to conferences and we weren't letting them get food reimbursed, that we don't do that, that's not something we would allow to happen from a district office standpoint. So if that did happen, we need to know about it to rectify it. Because if you don't have enough money to pay a teacher for food, they probably shouldn't go on the conference, right? I mean, it's one of those things that we should look at in terms of it. So overall, again, food purchases in our district represent 0.05% of our budget. So what I don't want to do is have that conversation take away from what we have to do as a district in terms of long-term budgetary talk and cuts and what we have to do reduction-wise. Now, that said, the optics of it can be really bad. So it is something we need to address, and we have addressed. And I think we've talked to the board about it. We've talked to the sites about it. There will still be food purchases. So PTAs, student events we have, you have teacher in-service. So unless I get direction from the board that absolutely zero food purchases, there will be some in the future. But again, it is a very, very minute amount of our overall budget in terms of long-term, I would say, in what we need to do in terms of it. So that's kind of where in terms of looking at the big perspective of what we need to do, it's relatively small. However, again, we accept it. We're going to work on it. We're going to kind of move forward in that direction. Realize, too, for hotels that came up today, most of the hotels that are on the CalCards, those are ASB. Those are both high schools. So Morro Bay, Salem Obispo High School, student-athletes going to hotels. That's through ASB funds. And even ASB funds have a whole set of, in terms of the approval process of how ASB funds are used by specific groups, goes through ASBs, goes through that process. So, and those are overseen by the athletic director, by the principal at the school site. So that's another aspect in terms of the hotel part. Not to say that there's not hotels that are spent for conferences or those types of things. And, yeah, we should watch those in terms of overall expenses. But realize 85% of our budget is people. So all the other things combined is a very small part. So it's mainly the budget aspect of it. So I just wanted to bring that up, kind of share that with the board. I did blog it out to the staff in terms of trying to explain CalCards and purchase orders and food purchases as well, just so that everybody had the same information.
Okay, thank you. I think the board's wish was that we make this brief and keep it to under 5 minutes.
Sure.
I think based on that, I'm going to ask Mrs. McGrath to wait until after the Teach Foundation, because I think that we have people that are waiting here that have been waiting patiently, and I think it's time to honor those folks. So, need to go too. Thank you very much.
See you guys.
So, let's move on to the Teach Foundation grants. Who's representing Teach tonight?
Hi, I'm Kathy Ahern.
And I'm Steve Jobst. We are board members of TEACH, which is an acronym for the educational advancement of children. It really doesn't have anything to do with TEACH school. Sometimes there's a misunderstanding about that. And so it's an endowed fund held at the Community Foundation here in San Luis Obispo. And the money is used to give grants to teachers for things that aren't otherwise paid for or available to them so that they can enrich the experience of their students.
And we're pleased to be giving this grant cycle 31 grants in the amount of $20,098. So now we will have the teachers come up, or the recipients, and explain who they are, where they're from, and what their grant's for.
Hi there. My name is Anna Massey. I am the part-time EL specialist of Del Mar Elementary. I would like to first thank the foundation. Thank you very much for this great, generous grant. The funds from the grant will help provide an outdoor experience for all our fifth graders, regardless of financial ability. We are currently in the planning stages of offering our students a two-night stay at our local state park in Morro Bay. Our homegrown idea will require a lot of help from students, parents, and our community. This grant is greatly needed to accomplish this enrichment opportunity. Thank you again for this gift of $1,000.
My name is Dara Stutzman. I work in the school district at both Sinsheimer and Hawthorne Elementary, and I am the intervention teacher at Hawthorne, and the grant I received in just over $400 is for our learning lab, which supports our intervention students at Hawthorne, and we are purchasing alternative seating. So that would be like some wobble stools and exercise balls and sensory cushions for our intervention students to support them in the work that they come in. I work with over 35 kids every day, and so it's just a little bit of alternative seating and choice for them when they come in and receive intervention. So thank you.
Good evening. I am not Jody Delaney. She is pregnant and she is in a nursing class this evening. But I'm the principal and I work with Jody, and I helped her write a grant to purchase Sphero robotics kits for our school. And this is in our effort to increase our endeavor to teach STEAM to our, at least our upper grade students. And what our teachers will be doing will be following the lead of a community volunteer who works in a local engineering firm in town. And he comes and he teaches the teachers how, he co-teaches with the teachers how to teach students computer coding through free software through Google. He ties it to real-world experiences and tries to motivate students, and he seeks their interests and what they want to be when they grow up and ties it to computer coding and robotics. And then they have competitions and fun, and you can imagine little spherical balls running around the classroom, running into each other, bleeping, speaking. You can imagine how much fun that is for fourth graders. That's what our plan is.
Hi there. My name is Michelle Hedrick, and I'm the librarian at Hawthorne. We received a TEACH grant. We're very grateful that we can bring the author Cindy Neuschwander to our school to meet with our students. She is a math teacher as well as an author of the Circumference series. You may have heard of her. So we're excited. It's kind of a great mix of language arts and math coming together, and it's going to be inspirational for the students, so we're very thankful.
Good evening. My name is Allison Engel, and I'm a teacher. I teach the special day class, more intensive population, at Monarch Grove Elementary.
Good evening. My name is Erin Roberts, and I'm an occupational therapist for the district.
We also want to thank the TEACH Foundation for the grant of $1,000 that we are putting towards a sensory room on our campus. We actually, working with a more intensive population of students, we know that they have large sensory needs. And taking a look on our campus, we saw that we have the need for a sensory room for more than just the students that are in the MI population. We have an MI class, an LI class, we have resource, we have students in gen ed with IEPs. And we wanted to really take a proactive approach instead of a reactive approach. And so we wanted to, we started a sensory room, and we're using the money to add to our sensory room. And it's embedded in these students' daily schedule, students that have IEPs, that they will utilize the sensory room for activities that help regulate their body so that they can come back to class and they are more likely to learn. So we were able to access the room on campus, and Mrs. Storm was very helpful with that. And so we took some data, and we saw that students that were utilizing the sensory room were more engaged in learning. They were ready to learn, their bodies were ready to learn, and they were doing much better. And so I'm going to turn it over to Arlo.
Yeah, no, we're just really excited to get the room going, and the whole goal is to increase student outcomes and decrease negative behaviors, and we're super excited to see that that's happening in the school. So thank you.
Mr. President, may I just ask a question? I'm sorry, I just trying to visualize in my mind a sensory room. Would that include manipulative types of things or what?
We have, so we started it where we were just getting materials that we maybe already had in our classroom. So we have a bunch of therapy balls that we pulled together. We have these sensory tubs that have materials in them, so they have a table with sensory activities. We have weighted blankets. We have these body socks. We have a whole list of materials that we are going to use the grant for to purchase. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so we're providing some vestibular input. We have a hanging swing, so there's a lot of kiddos that really helps regulate them with vestibular input. We're also in the process with the grant money going to have a Just Me space. It's going to be kind of dark and have some fiber optic lights and kind of a calming space for some students that would really benefit, some trauma and some anxiety. So it serves a lot of different purposes, and right now only students with IEPs are using it, but yeah, we're excited.
Yeah, we also just, I know that, it's people walk in and they see a bunch of balls and some fun bins, but truly, not only students, students with trauma that have been through trauma in early childhood are very dysregulated, and so it's really helpful for them to have a safe place to go, and it's on their daily schedule, so they know every day at this time they go. And it's just, sometimes people need a designated space to get calm that's safe, and it's in a comforting environment instead of a room that's a calm room that looks a little different. I think this is just a more proactive strategy and approach to that, so... Thank you
very much.
I would just say, as a former special educator and speech pathologist and special education director, I can testify to the benefits of having a sensory area for students, especially our students with high needs. But just actually, I think a lot of our students have sensory needs that are unrecognized. So thank you. This is great.
Thanks, Chris. I know Chris, he was my former administrator, so he knows the population of kids I work with. But thank you.
Hi, I'm Katie Peters at Sinsheimer, here for myself and Brittany. Thank you, Teach Grant. We're doing our mission tiles. I know this is something you've seen before from us, so it's kind of a STEAM activity, math and proportions, and studying the mission tile for social studies, and sort of a nice keepsake as well. So you've continued to fund this. I thank you very much. This is my model, so don't judge too closely. So students do a great job. Thank you.
Hi, it's OT Week. I'm Christine Moss, an occupational therapist with the district, and I appreciate the Teach Grant. I'm doing a similar thing to their sensory room. It's a sensory movement break room, but for its Sinsheimer, for the therapeutic learning class, to give the kids in that class just a place to go, to relax, to be embedded in their day, to see if it helps them, and hopefully the idea is it will help them function better and to be more open for learning and to be educated.
And I would also recognize Christine as somebody that I was fortunate enough to work with at the county.
That was 20 years ago.
It was a long time ago.
Good evening. My name is Linda Reynoso, and I'm the EL specialist at C.L. Smith Elementary. I was compelled to apply for this grant because I currently have a caseload of 87 English language learner families that I work primarily with. And I felt there was a need for bilingual books for our families because I'm really trying to promote literacy and family involvement in our school culture. And I think a very important piece of that is having the materials to do so. And so with this grant of $800, I will purchase bilingual books for our families to check out and read at home as a family. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Jessica Hoffman. I teach 8th grade science at Laguna Middle School. And I'd like to thank the foundation for this Teach Grant. The funds will be used to purchase the LightBlocks kit lab equipment. In 8th grade science, we're currently in the process of developing lessons which are aligned with the next generation science standards. And the material that comes in the LightBlocks kit, it has like lights in it, it has lenses, it has mirrors, it has a lot of cool stuff in it that students really like. And that equipment will be used to support labs, which are aligned with the next generation science standards, specifically in our waves and energy unit of study. So thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Erin Primer. I am the Director of Food Service for the district. My office is at Laguna Middle School, so I thank the Teach Foundation for granting us this fun project. It is called Edible Education: Adventures in Aeroponics.
So we are going to teach students how we grow food without using soil. It is a soilless system that is a tower garden. This will be housed inside the cafeteria, and we're hoping to partner with teachers like Jessica, we're going to chat after this, so that we can tie lesson plans that are NGSS related to math and science and art. It really hits on so many different areas of learning. So when students come into the cafeteria, they'll be able to see how food is grown. We can grow fruits, vegetables, and herbs. And we also want to work with teachers to bring their classes in so that they can take pH levels and test the water system and really see how this is a possibility without using soil to grow food. The really exciting part of this is that there will be zero food miles for anything that we're able to harvest from this source, and we will certify this as a community food source with public health so that we'll be able to serve and enjoy all of the things that we're going to be planting and harvesting. Yes, thank you.
And hey, Jessica, I just want to tell you something. I think it's interesting that you're talking about waves and things like that, right? With the next generation science standards, that's what LifeBlocks is going to be working on. One of our graduates from San Luis Obispo High School ultimately went on to get his PhD from MIT. He is now working in the LIGO lab and is working with a Nobel laureate in specifically the things that you're trying to teach. So that's really exciting, and it's great we're able to help our students. So thank you.
Thank you.
I saw Virginia earlier, so I was waiting. Hi, I'm Lindley Sainsbury, and I am the 8th grade English teacher and humanities at Los Osos Middle School, and I also do the drama program there at After School Club. So we're at our second production this year. We did A Christmas Carol in December, and now we're taking on Beauty and the Beast. There's over 60 students, which is about a fifth of our school involved in the drama club throughout the year. We incorporate technology and acting, and we have partnerships with Slow Rep Theater, with Morro Bay High School, and also with PCPA for our program. So our students are this weekend going to a competition up in Pleasanton for middle schoolers. And we just have a fabulous program that is filled with really talented people and tons of community support. So thank you very much, Teach Foundation. Again, appreciate it.
My name is Blair Brinkman, and I am a teacher at Morro Bay High School, and I'm teaching psychology, sociology, English, and AVID. Thank you very much, Teach Foundation. I will be using my $350 for my second issue of On the Brink, which is my psychology magazine that my students produce every year. Or I should say, this year they're producing it for the second time. They research and write their original articles about adolescent development. It can be anything from adolescence and stress to the foods that we eat and how they influence our bodies to sleep. Do we really need it? To the effects of drugs and alcohol on the adolescent brain and body. And so they get to research something that they are interested in. They produce an original article. They also have original artwork that goes with each of the articles. And so that is going to help us with the production of round two. And then the other part of the funds are going to be used to bring in a yoga instructor that we will use for a part of our stress and health unit in the spring.
Great. And Blair, would you talk for just a minute about the video that you had shared and where people could look at it, because it was pretty darn impressive.
Sure. How did I don't know how everybody got it, but that's really cool.
It's gone viral.
Yay!
And it arrived on my desk, and I shot it to the board, and they loved it. It was pretty amazing.
It's so teachers and board members have been replying or emailing me about them, and I pulled the three students up today, and I hope it's okay. I let them read all the emails, and they were in tears. They were really excited. So one of my groups is doing stress and the influence that it has on high school teenagers, and they asked me if it was okay if they also, on top of the article and illustration that they did, is it okay if they do a video? And I said, yeah, of course. And they said, you don't need to give us credit or anything. We just want to do it. And I said, well, I'll turn your A-pluses into A++s. Like, that's fine. And so they went out on their own time and videotaped many students on our campus about what stress does to their body and how they react to it. And then they took yellow post-it notes and blue post-it notes to represent the positive effects of stress as well as the negative effects of stress and how people handle them. And they took the post-its and they built a brain out of them on the Baywood wall. And they just really gave a platform for students to talk about stress and how we can handle it differently. And then in the end, they talked about how we don't have to handle stress negatively, that there are positive ways to handle it. And their production was professional and positive. And I can email the link somewhere. You have it.
I'll make sure it gets on our website, too.
Okay.
So we'll Facebook it.
Yay.
It's really, it's so special.
It's really neat. And the students are proud of their work. And that student, one of the students is also being showcased at the Slow Film Festival. At the end of, he's going to be really upset that I'm telling you this, but at the end of our video that he shot for our class, you'll see a link to his video that's going to be showcased at Slow Film Festival. And it's 5 minutes worth your time. It's fabulous. Yeah.
Thanks, Blair.
Thank you.
Question. I have a question about the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Who is that? How do you get a copy of that?
Would you like this one?
Well, not if it's your only one, but yes, I would love to see it. Thank you very much.
I used CreateSpace to put the magazine together. So all of the students did their individual articles, and then they sent them to me through Classroom. And then I compiled them into one document. And then I uploaded it to CreateSpace. And with CreateSpace, you can then actually upload it to Amazon. So it's on Amazon for purchase.
Wow.
Their parents can purchase a copy of a magazine that they're published in, which
awesome.
Is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
Thank you very much.
Hello. I'm Noelle Eben. I am the new theater director at Morro Bay High School. This year we are putting on Little Shop of Horrors, and thank you so much to the Teach Foundation. Lots of people do not understand how much money musicals cost. It's really wild. So this money is super helpful for us to purchase costumes and sets and pay for designers and pianists to come in. We really feel like this musical can be a big community-wide event and really get a lot of students involved at our school. And we just want to make it as big and as fun as possible. So thank you so much.
And when is your production?
We perform March 15th, 16th, and 17th. So we are in the swing. We're in full rehearsals right now. It's going really well. We hope you come out and see us. Thank you.
Would you like to know what I said? Maybe, a little bit. I know to the audience it looks strange behind me, but Kristen Nussbaum, Slow High, thank you so much to the Teach Foundation for the grant of $800 that allows 50 or so students to join us on March the 3rd for the Disneyland Deaf Awareness Day. It allows the students to take what they learn in the classroom and apply it in the social construct of Los Angeles deaf community and culture in a setting that is hospitable, warm, and welcoming. We're excited to have all students join us, and the grant allows everyone to come together as a family and enjoy a really fun day that is both enjoyable and enriching. So thank you so much. Thank you, Teach Foundation, as well.
Good evening. I'm Nina Reinecker. I teach guitar at San Luis Obispo High School, and I'd like to thank the Teach Foundation for a grant of $200 to bring in a professional musician who plays guitar to teach the students lead guitar and help them to learn a variety of different styles of music and to kind of take their guitar playing to the next level in Guitar 3 by bringing in this outside presenter. So thank you to Teach Foundation.
Scott Nairn, San Luis Obispo High School, out of order. The $500 that Teach gave us will pay for our student-produced newspaper. This is our sixth edition. And give us some freedom in our budget for the national convention that I'm going to be taking next year's editors to. I'll also be speaking at that convention, Dr. Prater, about working with admin on difficult subjects. So, I got invited, and so I do it for free. So thank you very much.
If I could just personally thank you. I was the... Hi, how are you? I was the newspaper teacher, journalism teacher down at Hancock College, and I just want to share with you, I know exactly how hard your job is.
And what a great job
you're doing.
I appreciate your email among all the emails that I get. I have editions of this, too, so I'll leave these for you guys. Thanks a lot.
Hi, I'm Ryan Ritchie. I'm a science teacher at Slo High School, and I'd like to take a moment to thank the Teach Foundation for giving me, it's not a very flashy grant, but it will get me some new digital scales, which our chemistry department desperately needs. We're weighing things all the time in chemistry. It's a really important piece of equipment. Thanks, guys.
Good evening. I'm Jen Sawyer, and I'm the library tech at San Luis Obispo High School. And I'd like to thank the Teach Foundation for awarding me a $500 grant, which I will be using. Actually, I already have arrived to be purchasing 42 copies of a book called The 57 Bus. And we had a unique opportunity, the downtown San Luis Obispo County Library. Several of their staff came to me with a unique opportunity. They were awarded a grant to have award-winning journalist and author Dashka Slater, who most recently wrote this young adult book called The 57 Bus. They were awarded a grant to bring her to our area. And so they were offering us the opportunity to have her come and speak at San Luis Obispo High School, which, among other schools, in our district, and it's very costly to have authors come. So we were very happy to piggyback on the grant they received, and then I was able to ask for money to get copies of the book, which will allow us to hopefully what the book will do is it'll give us a chance to get the book out to students and staff before the author comes, which always is much more enriching when an author comes if you've read their work. The really great thing about this title as well is that it was based on a New York Times Magazine article. So because it is based on an article, students will have an opportunity to read the article, hopefully, working with some departments on that as well, before the author comes. And what's nice is that because we have the copies of the book, now classes can read it. We have enough for a class set. Once the author has come and gone, it will still continue to be available. So I'm very grateful for the grant and the opportunity to get the word out and get the book out to students before the author is coming to our campus on May 3rd. So, thank you. Any questions? Okay. Wow. Thank you.
So, thank you to all the teachers. I think we should give them a round of applause.
I'd like to say thank you to the Teach Foundation. Your generosity, Dr. Jobst and Ms. Ahern, what you do, I hope you report back to the board our gratitude for your generosity and what you help our teachers to achieve.
Thank you. And this is probably a little extra commentary. I'm not able to attend the school board meetings very often, but... we are a nonprofit organization, so all of the donations made to Teach are 100% used for grants to teachers. We have no paid staff. All of our work is volunteer. So we review these grant applications. They're reviewed by active and former teachers and others in the community to decide which grants are given and how, and based on how much money we have to give, what the size of the grant may be. And so for the school board, I would say, you can see the creative nature of what these grants are like. And so if there is money available in the future for this kind of granting, you already have a structure in place for giving these grants. So more could be done than the $20,000 that we are able to give. I understand things are tight, but I have always been impressed. I've been on this board for several years. I've always been impressed with, as I said, the creative nature of what teachers are doing with these funds to enrich their students. So if that's a possibility in the future, you can see that any money that the school board might have in this direction will be well spent. Great. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We're going to take a three-minute break because I know a lot of times that after the presentation, the teachers like to leave. And feel free to stay, of course, but we'll take 3 minutes to allow you to leave, so then we'll continue on with the meeting. So starting now, we'll have a three-minute break. To ask that we begin, we'll go on with items 8.02. Mrs. McGrath.
Yes, thank you. Happy to give you an update this evening. We have a couple of follow-up things and some celebrations to give you. So as Lisa mentioned earlier, this is CTE month, and I know you're all big supporters of career technical education. So this is a month to really celebrate all the amazing career opportunities that our students receive at our secondary schools. So just a reminder about that. I did want to follow up with you. At a past board meeting, Mrs. Neuhauser mentioned a concern about a story that she gave about a parent that was not able to get a textbook for her child, and I know that you take this seriously as well as the rest of us do. Mrs. Shields did follow up with her immediately that night and just let her know that that's a legal right, and she wanted some additional information so she could follow up. However, she was told that this is not a current concern. This was from a few years ago, so the parent's able to access a textbook this year, and the child has everything they need. So okay. I knew that would be a concern to you. Just wanted to follow up and let you know that is a concern from years past. Also to let you know that there are some amazing things to celebrate. We had news that Del Mar Elementary, as well as Teach Elementary, have been asked to submit an application for California Distinguished School Awards. So this is an incredible state award. So happy. Let's see the big smile. I love it. So happy. And we look forward to that. I will braggingly say it's the only schools within the area as well. So really proud of all the work that teachers and staff do at those schools to have students achieving at really high levels. So that's excellent. Also, other great news is that SLO High and Morro Bay High both received news that they both received six-year WASC accreditations, the highest extension that you can receive. And the final one, we'll get to hear more about this next week, but Los Osos Middle School as well, so it's a good day to celebrate. But Los Osos Middle School as well was notified that they are a Schools to Watch Middle School, and this is an incredible honor of only a small handful of middle schools across our state have received this, and it's really not just an award, but really a longer series of self-reflection and kind of a process that the school continues to go through in improving and analyzing their practices to ensure that they're really implementing things that are beneficial to students. So we will hear more about that when we're at LOMS at our next board meeting, but just wanted to say that we're so happy for many of our schools being recognized for their amazing work.
Great, thank you very much. Let's move on to the Measure D update. That would be 8.03.
Well, since Mr. Pinkerton is out for the moment, I will just respond quickly that we are flying right along. And at both our comprehensive high schools, as well as getting started at Baywood and Bishop's Peak, they're making the necessary preparations for those improvements. The office at C.L. Smith, we expect to be completed this summer, thank goodness, and we expect it to be just a beautiful campus when completed, and with the new bus turnouts in the front and more space to park on the side. And then I just really want you to know the conversations from the board study sessions will highlight more of these, but we are really trying to be proactive with regard to the upcoming facility construction projects at San Luis Obispo High School. For the next year and a half, 2 years, it's going to be a challenge to coordinate and make sure that students have proper and adequate flow to their classrooms while the buildings are being constructed. I got this. And I'm excited for where it's going. It's just going to be one of those rough patches for the next few years as we coordinate. Ryan's done an exceptional job working with staff at each of the sites as well as at BG&T just to make sure everything's coordinated as best as we can manage given the amount of activity that will be occurring utilizing those funds. So most proud of where it's going to go. We just need to be patient and kind with ourselves and one another in the years ahead. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to item number 9.01, which is a resolution about developer fee reports and five-year findings. And I believe that would be Mr. Pinkerton.
So, so every year we update our annual developer fee report to the board. So it's actually becoming an informational item that comes out every November to the board, and we've been updating our five-year report as well. So that actually came to the board back in November. So it has to be within 180 days of the beginning of the fiscal year. Basically, that has to come to you. So in talking to our attorney, Deidre Sakai, she told me, though, that with a five-year report, we actually have to do a resolution. So I need the board to do a resolution, which basically approves that five-year process. So if Mrs. Holmes can pull it up really quick. And what's in the information report basically is an annual kind of budget of how much we received, how much we spent, what each individual project was. So this is the breakdown. So all of our revenues as well as all of our expenditures. And at the very bottom, there's a five-year plan. And so for us, developer fees, kind of what our plan currently looks like for the next 5 years is we have our we have two projects at two of our elementary schools to expand them for potential growth. One is C.L. Smith. That's the office that in terms of expanding the office building itself. And then also at Bishop's Peak, so the multipurpose room office there in terms of expansion, growing. As we know, Teach was moved off of that campus because of the growth issues that we were experiencing there. And then the third key project is really the new, which has been called the Annex Building in the past. It's now going to be the new Math Building at San Luis Obispo High School. But that's increasing the number of classrooms at that campus. We'll see if the current growth continues. We saw 100 extra kids that we did not account for at the beginning of this year at San Luis Obispo High School. So you know, if that's going to continue or not, we'll see. But there's definitely a need for more classrooms at the high school campus. And then in terms of just overall growth for the board, in terms of where we're headed in the future, you know, there's a lot of potential development south of town. I don't know how many students are going to come out of that or what's going to happen in terms of it, but you know, we may need to look at a sixth grade campus at some point or something like that if we see growth at all of our elementary schools or what we're going to do here in San Luis Obispo. So not necessarily growth on the coast right now, but definitely in the city there's a lot of potential for growth. So whether that is going to require another you know, piece of land, basically, to build another school site or again, expand our current sites for those things. Those are that's kind of what our plan looks like for the next 5 years.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
Yeah. Ryan, I know this looks like a lot of money, and I know we're facing the Diablo cuts, and I just want to remind everybody that this money is – well, if you can explain it, this money is like sacrosanct. It can't be used for anything other than these items.
Yeah, so developer fees can only be used for growth projects. Yeah.
Well, that was short. Good.
Building projects cannot be part of the your overall general fund budget. None of those things. It has to be tied to growth construction.
Yeah. And thank you.
That's it.
A lot shorter than I would have said it.
Yeah.
Excellent question. Okay. Other questions from the board? Okay, is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for either discussion or a motion or both. Would someone like to make a motion?
Sure. I'd like to move that we
accept. Oh, I think Mrs. Shuffler had it first.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought there was...
I'd like to make a motion that we adopt resolution number 091718, developer fee report and five-year findings.
And with my light on second, I'd like to now second the motion to adopt the resolution.
Is there any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Mrs. Holmes, I believe this is a roll call vote.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mrs. Roger? Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item number 10.01, student attendance report. I believe that will be Mr. Dowler.
I'm not sure if I'm going to see better with my glasses or without them. It's like far than close. Okay, student attendance report. I'm going to be... It's middle age. Student attendance report. I'll be going over data from the 2016 to 2017 school year because it's comprehensive in scope. So go forward one more. So overall, we've looked at three different measurements of student attendance data. Average daily attendance. So I put the percentage for last year for the whole district and what that represented, down 0.22%. Really, when you get above 95% attendance, most districts aspire to about 95% attendance. When you get it to 97%, that would be like gold bar attendance. So, but 95% is a good measurement, and being up or down 0.22 is really within the standard variation from year to year. Truancy was up a little bit last year, but again, the threshold for truancy is really low. It's three unexcused absences. So this doesn't represent an at-risk subset of our school population. This is really, you know, a wide variety of different types of families and is very representative of our overall demographics when you look at our truant students around the district.
Mr. Dowler, if I may, just a quick question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Microphone.
I'm sorry.
There.
It's just going back to average daily attendance. That when you're calculating that figure, that accounts for also the people that have legitimately excused absences.
When no, it's just the actual? Anybody, in a seat on a given day.
Okay, all right.
So anybody that walks through the door actually is included in that average daily attendance. So if you have a kid attend first period but not second through sixth, they're still counted in that overall figure.
Thank you.
And if they miss the school day, even if it's an excuse and you call in, it does not count.
Yeah.
And then I have a question about truancy. Is when is attendance taken during the day?
Well, typically, at the beginning of elementary school is usually in the morning, I would imagine, and then in secondary schools at the beginning of a period.
Of first period?
Of no, so it's through
of
it's
every
period,
period
attendance for the secondary.
Okay,
schools,
so
yeah.
So if a student is present for part of the day and then misses part of the day, is that considered
truancy?
Truant? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So students who are in sports but maybe don't at the high school level, but who leave and haven't reported
only be unexcused absences. So that would be an ACT code, which is a school-based activity, which
okay.
isn't considered an unexcused absence. So an unexcused absence is they pulled a student in the middle of the day to go to a family event.
Okay.
That would be an unexcused absence.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Oh, can you go back? I was building up to something, and then my momentum got killed. So I just want to restore the vibe here. So chronic absenteeism is really now what the state of California is really looking at when they look at attendance. There's a lot of attention paid to chronic absenteeism. I've been talking about it for about 5 years, but the state of California is now really hitting on it in terms of even accountability for schools. In our it's the LCAP. Right, or it's the LCAP report that we have to that we're not accountable to, so we have to report on chronic absenteeism. So this last year was a baseline data year, so about 9.8%. So that means about almost one out of every 10 students was considered chronically absent. Yeah, a little bit more. Thanks, Walt. So 9.8% is, I can't tell you whether that's up or down because, again, it's a baseline data year. So they did some new things to account for student absenteeism at our secondary schools that we hadn't been measuring before. Before, we had been measuring period absences. So our student absentee rate, our chronic absentee rate was much higher. But now the state is saying, no, if they walk in at any point in the day, they're counted in your overall attendance. So we can get at least we're comparing a similar number now to what the state wants to count. So that's helpful. One moving forward. So this really, see, now I need my glasses. If you look at the data, this gives us a baseline comparison on the right-hand column. So this is a chronic absentee rate for the districts around the county. So you can see our chronic absentee rate isn't the best, but it's almost the best in the whole county. So that gives us a basis of comparison. I don't like data in a vacuum. I like some sort of basis for comparison. All right. One of the things I wanted to talk about is why in this report I'm talking about chronic absenteeism versus truancy. Truancy's previously been the really go-to attendance figure that draws attention in the media or something like that, but again, all the studies that have been done around students missing school have really pointed to it doesn't matter whether it's an unexcused absence or an excused absence, that student is missing instruction. And when you accumulate absences, whether they're excused, unexcused, or cuts, students that miss more than 10% of school are exponentially more likely of performing below proficiency or having an exponential, or more likely of not graduating for high school. So if you go to the next slide. You know, all these studies, all the information presented in the slide is data that's been compiled from a national organization called Attendance Works, and they've correlated all these studies to show how students that don't attend school, no matter the reason for the absence, don't perform well academically and are at risk. Okay, moving forward. All right, I got to remember exactly what I did here. We've bounced this presentation around, so bear with me. This is a look at all of our absent students and the percentage they make of absent students. So all the demographics and the percentage they make of absent students, of chronically absent students, versus what they make up in our overall demographics. So the blue line, is the percentage of that student subgroup among chronic absentee students. The red is the percentage of the subgroup in the overall district enrollment. So if the blue bar is higher than the red bar, this represents disproportionality. So you can begin to see who our at-risk students are and how they're likely to be chronically absent. You can see our socioeconomic disadvantaged students are much more represented amongst chronic absent students than they are in their overall enrollment in the school district. And while there are, you know, Hispanic students are also slightly more likely to be represented amongst chronic absentee than they are enrolled, it's really our socioeconomic where you see a huge disparity. And going to the next slide. Another way to look at disproportionality is to look at propensity. And so one thing that I did to compile this graph is looking at, of the overall subgroup, how likely are they to be, who is chronically absent of that overall subgroup? And you can begin to create some comparisons. So amongst SED students, 18% of them were 18% of our socioeconomic disadvantaged students were chronically absent versus non-SED students. You see that comparison is huge. So if you are a socioeconomic disadvantaged student in this school district, you are more than twice as likely to be chronically absent than our non-SED population. Similarly, our special education population compared to non-special education and so forth.
Yes. Chris, I could never find a legend that told me what EO represented.
English only.
English only. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I wanted, you know, you want to, what I tried to show here is a comparison of EL students compared to English only, socioeconomic disadvantaged and non-socioeconomic disadvantaged, special education compared to non-special education, and Hispanic compared to white. So you can really begin to see the true impacts of disproportionality in a graph like this. Okay, moving forward. All right, so knowing and recognizing that chronic absenteeism is indeed a problem, and it's a problem that affects our most vulnerable subgroups in the district, I wanted a couple principals to come forward and talk about initiatives that they've taken on in their schools to address chronic absenteeism, and I think they've both been very effective at least in the last year in addressing this problem at their schools.
All right, so for us at Laguna, it's really just about building school culture. We know that most of our students are either coming to us on the bus or brought by parents, so they're not choosing every morning to get up and go to school. A lot of times it's someone shoving them out the door. So we do have that advantage, and we do take full advantage of having that advantage. But at school itself, we know that students are more likely to come to school, want to be at school, and stay at school if they feel comfortable there. So our whole goal from... My wife said I should just stand up here and wave at everybody because that's what everyone sees in the morning. The first thing is me standing out there waving and smiling. But creating that welcoming atmosphere from the second students walk on campus until they leave, and we work to keep them at school beyond the school day. So our overall school culture, we keep scoring really high on school culture. We're 99th percent for all schools and for like schools, according to our California Healthy Kids survey. When we ask our own students, how do you feel at school? Do you feel like people here care about you? They are a resounding yes. Our teachers do care about us. They notice when we're gone, and that's huge for bringing kids to school because if no one ever asks them, hey, where were you? We missed you yesterday, the likelihood of that kid wanting to be at school the next day goes down. After school, we have all kinds of clubs for kids to get involved, and our goal is really to find something for every kid. We've got Friday Night Live, we've got a sewing club, a GSA, a culinary club, entrepreneurs, builders, animation, Minecraft, a little bit of something for everybody. We've added new sports thanks to some initiatives that our board has put forth and our district has put forth, so we have more kids staying at school every day. We have school support for students. We've got math lab, we've got a homework club, we have extended library hours that help give our kids a place to be on campus, and for those kids who don't have a comfortable place at home, it provides that comfortable space for them, so school really becomes our safe place. We've got activities for kids to get involved in. There's a little picture down there of our Entrepreneurs Club. We've got counseling at school. We've got people at our school to help our kids feel great. So if we can go to the next slide, please. Who's got the clicker? Can we click? There we go. So that's by the numbers there. We're above the national average for relationships with teachers, relationships with peers, teacher support, and peer interaction. That's according to our Youth Truth survey. That comes straight from our kids. We had 39% of our students participate in a school sport, and last year that translated to 281 students. This year we're already up at that range. We have more students this year, but we also have more students participating in athletics. We just had our wrestling
demonstration today, our wrestling is going to be a lot bigger this year. We've got about two clubs happening every day on our campus. We have about 15 students who show up per club. Our library and our math lab have about 25 students per day. So when you total up kind of everything that we have going on any school day, we have about 100 students who stay after the school day every day on our campus by choice. They want to be there. They don't have to be there. That is about 12% of our students for an extended day. Go to the next slide, please. And I think that's it. Woohoo.
John?
Yeah.
What at Laguna, what happens if you notice a student is chronically absent? What do you do?
The first line of defense is usually our office. They will let us know. We will check in with the counselors. We'll look at why, really. I mean, if we have a student that we don't know why is not showing up, usually we'll have some information from the family or the parents. And then we start looking at what measures do we need to take. We follow the SARB process pretty closely, so we send out a letter first, followed by a phone call, followed by a meeting. Scott takes care of all of our SARB stuff. So he will meet with the family, and we'll work on a plan to try to get that kid involved in school. If we can identify why the student is coming to school, we can help fix the problem. If we ignore the fact that the student's not coming to school, we can't fix that problem.
Thank you.
John, have you thought about how this might affect your school site plan and what relationship, is, if any, this has with your school site plan and what recommendations you might have for our LCAP development?
Well, when we look at the socioeconomically disadvantaged group, really kind of in any area that we've been focusing, that group is usually the most disparate in terms of academic performance, in terms of attendance, all of these things. In looking at that, we're always cognizant of how do we reach those kids. The hard part is identifying our students who are socioeconomically disadvantaged because we can get better information out of Illuminate. But really targeting those students as a group is more difficult. So we do look at that in our school plan of how are we really going to create a system where we can not only track those kids but try to front load our school so we are meeting the needs of those families and those kids before they get to school. If there were a magic bullet, I think we would have discovered it before, but I think part of it is just looking at data like this and recognizing that this group is out of line with what we see on the surface. Unless we really look for that group and look at how different they are from our non-socioeconomically disadvantaged group, we can't come up with a plan to fix it. So we are beginning to look at how do we target these kids? Who are these kids? How do we identify them earlier? Because using the data that Chris has been showing us too and looking at the long-range data, we know these problems exist prior to kids getting to us. As a district, if we're looking at our LCAP plan, we really have to start focusing on that subgroup and figuring out how we can identify families earlier and then identify those specific needs for those kids.
Chris. Thank you. So, John, I know when I was doing the after-school newspaper before your time at Laguna and both at Los Osos Middle School, I noticed that there were other community volunteers there, and there's other PTA.
Yeah.
Can you give it? There's something that happens, I think, with kids when they're seeing the community on campus. Can you talk?
Yeah, about and it? It's interesting because we. Getting people onto our campus is sometimes challenging. It really depends on where we've got people. So our Makers Club, we have community members who are coming in helping out. Our Entrepreneurs Club has been great because it really is a partnership with MSCS, Mission Community Services. Is that what it is? So our kids are getting a little more opportunity to branch out from campus when they see people who come onto campus to help them out. So that's happening with our FCCLA. Christine Carlin has been fantastic about bringing people in to inspire our kids. The more kids can see that people care about them and are coming in to work with them and help draw them into the community, the more they want to be at school.
Yeah. So I just want to thank the volunteers that are, there's so many at all of our schools.
Oh yeah.
It's just great.
And it's fantastic. It's great for our kids too, because they also see these are people who care about us and they don't have to be here.
Good evening, Janet Gould, Delmar Elementary School, and we're regularly pleased to come and talk about our high scores and our high percentages that students at Delmar receive. But then when it came to chronic absenteeism, that was one area where we didn't want those high percentages. And in the 15-16 school year, We had 14.7% of our students with chronic absenteeism. And we really kind of identified that's a problem. It's an outlier. It's above what our district average is. And so then we spent last year, the 16-17 school year, working with our school site council and our leadership team, really kind of strategizing, talking to other schools, looking online for resources, what are some things we can do, and then started to implement last year and are continuing this year. Just some of the data already, what we noticed in 2017, at the end of last year, our chronic absentee rate had decreased 3.3% to 11.4%. This year we set our goal for a 9% chronic absenteeism rate. And last year, first trimester, so 16-17 T1, we were at 13% chronic absenteeism. This year, we were at 8% chronic absenteeism, so a decrease of 5% over Tri-1. And I looked at the data today, and looking at the students that are enrolled at Del Mar today, only 6% of our students are chronically absent. So we are making progress. You can go to the next slide. So how have we done that? At the elementary level, it's really, it's getting in with the parents, because 50% of our kids who are chronically absent are the K-1. Other 25% are second and third grade. So really it's only 25% of our population that are in that fourth and fifth grade that are currently chronically absent. So we feel like we have a very engaging school with many wonderful things that are happening for our kids to make them want to be there, but we really needed to look at the parents and the families and the situations to figure out how we could support these families in getting their children to school. And so the first thing was getting our message out on the importance of school attendance starting very early. So kindergarten, orientation night, we had our secretary clerk there who did just a wonderful job talking to the parents about the importance of attendance, back-to-school night presentations, open house presentations, newsletters, information would go out about the importance of attendance. Last year we started, and this year we continued at the beginning of this year an attendance pledge that went out to every student and their parents to read over what our goal for attendance was and have them sign an attendance pledge. We also have started doing attendance progress letters that come out at the trimester conferences. So it will say Del Mar's goal is 96% attendance. Your child's attendance is currently this. And give some statements about, again, the effects of positive attendance. We also, my school counselor and myself, kind of know those kiddos and make sure that we attend parent-teacher conferences of kids that we do have concerns with attendance so that we can be there and just figure out what we need to do to support those families and let them know that we're aware and we want to help them. We also started some chronic absenteeism alert letters that kind of go out end of March, beginning of April, that are kiddos that are chronically absent now, but because it's a 10%, the number changes as the year progresses. So if there's 100 days of school, if they've been absent 10 days, which is we just passed the 100th day, then they're chronically absent. But as the year goes on, it's 18 days total. So we look at kids at the 10, 11, 12, and we start sending letters out to parents just saying, are you aware your child, is at risk for being chronically absent? And attendance data, this was this year we started on all of the data reports that we give to teachers at the beginning of the year, so we let them know of their kids that are coming in and what their reading scores are and what their math scores are. We also let the teachers know what the child's attendance looked like last year. So they knew from day one if a child in their class was someone that they needed to have concerns about for attendance, and we're following that up with each of the trimester data reports that we hand out. We also have just increased and gotten out information about independent studies and how families can access one time a year from 5 to 20 days the independent study program. And really also it's just knowing our students, my secretary clerk and I, who secretary clerk does attendance, Amy Burton, we meet regularly and look at lists of kids and look at reasons and kind of really try and know the kids and know which families we need to work with. Also having conversations with the parents, bringing the parents in to have conversations. And then really when students kind of get to that third, fourth grade level, I'll go and have conversations with the kiddos and kind of work with them on and setting goals and taking them out to lunch as their attendance improves, things like that. So we've seen good success and look forward to continued success.
So, Janet, a quick question. On the independent study, is that for students to work at home, or
if a family is going to be away from school for more than 5 days, I believe it's up to 20, yes, they can.
But that student is still considered absent.
If they sign up for it's allowed through the state board. So if they sign up for independent study, and the teacher prepares a list of materials, a list of work that they have to complete over the time that they're gone, they go and they complete that work, and on the first day back, they return a completed packet with all the work that they have done while they're gone. Then one time a year, those are kind of wiped off and not considered unexcused absences.
Oh, okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
I've compiled a list of next steps here and questions. I think the key thing that we need to ask is, why are students chronically absent, like John was talking about? How do we address the issues with those parents on an individual or even a systemic basis? And then how does this relate to academic achievement in our district? I think those are further things to look at, but on the left are things that we're doing right now in order to make sure that we identify our chronically absent and most at-risk students and that we intervene. One thing I was going to say that I thought that John didn't talk up about a lot was that they do have family support team meetings, so when they identify a student that's chronically absent that has other risk identifiers, they'll meet with a therapist, with the family advocate, the counseling staff, and the administrative Scott or John, and they'll talk about that student, and they'll cross, they'll make sure that everybody is in on supporting that family and positive attendance for that student. And I also would like to say that I got the best parent complaint ever last year about from Del Mar. It was a parent at Del Mar who complained about the letters that they were receiving about attendance for their child. I thought, you know, this is a great complaint to get, is that the school is actively messaging to families about the importance of school attendance, and you can't fault that. I think that's a great thing.
Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, Chris, the amount of work, and I really appreciate the disaggregating of the subgroups. It's really eye-opening, and the SED numbers are really scary. This comes on the heels, I think, of a presentation that Amy gave recently on the students starting out 1 year behind and then never catching up. And so the board has instituted its goals, and it's got the culture of care and all means all, and I'm hoping that that's enough support to make some changes in this.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember, I think we can get a lot done, and I don't think it requires a lot of money. I think that these are cultural. So the highlights that we had tonight were really cultural shifts. This is about messaging. This is about promoting. This is about making sure that people are clear. And there's a certain intentionality to improving school attendance that doesn't require any really extra investment. So I'm optimistic about that.
So what Mrs. Sheffer was asking me, she was asking about special education students, and I know sometimes we have some students that are you know, chronically ill students. So the special ed numbers would include some of those students, right, Chris?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
That's absolutely true.
And the other question I have again goes back to the LCAP, Dr. Prater. This might be a question for you, because we know that this is one of the state. One of the factors that the state will look at on the dashboard, is this something that we do address in our LCAP plan? And can you just talk about that for just a second? Because I think that's real important. Because I think, frankly, you know, the original plan was to talk about suspensions, but we know suspension data can be manipulated. Chronic absenteeism cannot be manipulated. And so I think in some ways the idea was that this is one way of taking the temperature of the health of your community and your schools.
Well, we're going after this on multiple levels. Inside the classroom, with engaging kids through high-quality instruction, trying to support our staff to develop their capacities for how to engage students to get them where they need to be, I think John mentioned earlier, it was excellent insight about front-loading staff and prepare before the student even arrives, before the parents even arrive, which is why disaggregating the data and really looking at the truth behind what it is we're doing and the students that we actually have is so critical. So we've come leaps and bounds just in the last 5 years on looking at that. So in the LCAP, a considerable piece in the focus area of culture of care and making sure that the that we're able to support kids and families in an intelligent and refined way on multiple levels. So in my estimation, our LCAP goals have led us to this conversation and to this viewpoint. It has heightened our own awareness just over the last few years by really breaking apart the data, really looking at kids in a personalized way so that you can begin to see it in Del Mar. Mrs. Gold, you know, when she presented, you could see she and her staff are breaking it down. They're breaking it down not just in subgroups but by individual students, which I think is critical. And not being afraid to have conversations with families who are in crisis themselves. And Mr. Dowler, for years, has been behind the scenes challenging all of our assumptions about equity and engagement and access to high-quality classrooms, high-quality activities, and the supports needed to make that happen. So I would argue our LCAP is a work in progress, and it's getting better and better every year because of our awareness and because of the things that we're doing.
This is just a discussion item. It's not an action item, but I will go to the public. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this? Mrs. Neuhauser?
Thank you, Judy Neuhauser, Los Osos. I really want to thank you for putting together a great data presentation on this. And I really appreciated the help of understanding the blue bar, red bar. And I really appreciated hearing all the different types of things that the schools are doing. And, you know, one thing as a teacher I certainly learned is that every year you're starting new because you have new families, especially as, you know, people coming in from kindergarten. So it's not like you do it and you have educated everybody and now you can move on to something else. Because every year you have new students and you have new families that you're dealing with. So it's an ongoing process that has to be taken each year. I dealt with a lot of students who had disrupted, you know, chronic absences over the years, not just in San Luis Coastal, but coming from other places. And yes, those students were really behind. And I think one of the things that we do need to say is that, yes, there are budget considerations in this. Those students are in need of intervention. There is only so much that a classroom teacher can do with high numbers of students to try and make up for deficits that these kids, they've missed the instruction. And as much as you can work with them, you're still not able to make that up just within the classroom. And so intervention is really critical. And so when you make budget consideration, when you make budget decisions this year, I would encourage you to take a look at what schools have those low SED, those huge numbers of low SED students? How can you support those schools in an extra way in order to be able to help those kids succeed? Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anybody else? Okay. As I said, this was Mrs. Roger.
Yeah, I just wanted to, two things. Piggybacking, I guess, or taking off on Mrs. Neuhauser's comment, I would note that Del Mar is a school with a very high SED population.
And about 60%?
They are showing fabulous results from their efforts at intervention. And it was interesting to me the differences in approach between the elementary and the middle school. where with the elementary, you're working a lot with the parents. And when you get to middle school, it's the drop me off at the corner. And you're really forced to work more with the students. And it's interesting and encouraging to see that the two different approaches that are being taken are really age appropriate. So I commend both schools for their efforts.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to item number 10.03, approve proposed revisions to Board Policy 6142.1, Instruction, Sexual Health and HIV AIDS Prevention. This is a second reading.
You skipped one, 10.02.
Oh, did I skip 10.02? Sorry, I meant to do, should be 10.02, approve proposed revisions to Board Policy 1325, Community Relations, Advertising and Promotion. This is a second reading. And that will be Mrs. McGrath.
Yes, thank you. I bring before you Board Policy 1325, Community Relations. We did have a first reading of this in January, and this is a policy that we received revisions through Gamut. We looked over that as well as your board subcommittee. So tonight, perhaps looking for your approval on this policy.
Okay, are there any questions from the board to Mr. McGrath? Mr. Millar.
Remind me of the color coding thing again.
Yes, red is suggestions from Gamut, and purple are additional suggestions from the subcommittee.
So I'm confused by the addition of or their parents or guardians. Materials approved for distribution shall further the district's intended purpose, directly benefit the students, or their parents or guardians, and support the basic educational mission of the district or be of intrinsic value to the students. I don't know why we would have materials that are being distributed for the direct benefit of the parents. Does that mean just keeping parents informed, or?
I think that's exactly what the thought was, right? That some materials go home for maybe family support or parent benefit.
Okay. And after the recitation of all these requirements, it just strikes me as odd to add the superintendent, principal, or designee shall not accept for distribution any materials or advertisements prohibited by law or administrative thing. I guess you could say it, but we list all these. Anyway, fine.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, I'll go to the public. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. This is a second reading. Would someone like to make a motion, and then we can see if there's any further discussion?
I'd like to move acceptance of Board Policy 1325.
We have a motion by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Is there a second to approve this?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there further board discussion on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it for a vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Now let's move on to 10.03. Approve proposed revisions to Board Policy 6142.1, Instruction, Sexual Health, and HIV AIDS Prevention. And I believe that is you again, Mrs. McGrath.
Yes, sir. This is a second reading as well. We brought this forward in January. Again, the red is suggestions from Gamut, as well as a few kind of minor suggestions from the board subcommittee, and would look to seek your approval on this one.
Okay. Any questions? Mr. Millar.
So, if I'm understanding the color coding right, the first paragraph, which has been struck through but is in red, would be the recommendation of Gamut?
Correct.
And then our esteemed subcommittee decided to rewrite the whole thing with the paragraph below it?
Yeah, it is kind of odd that that's highlighted like that. So the in red is what Gamut suggested the first paragraph be replaced with, and the board subcommittee agreed with that. So sure why that kind of was highlighted in
purple.
So
the blue highlighting is just that that second paragraph that's not struck through is the recommendation. of the language. Okay. And so then moving down a little farther, what is the magenta text? Yeah. Who gave us that?
I think that's supposed to be red.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
We're just trying to confuse you, Walter.
No. I think someone clicked one square off the red square.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Thank you. I'm just trying to keep the color coding straight.
Yeah, me too.
It's a hard job, Walter. We're doing the best we can here.
Mr. Buckman?
I just want to point out I'm recognizing some of the magenta. So the move from the end of the document, that was the subcommittee's recommendation. It seemed to flow better. So.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Quisenberry.
I just want to commend Mr. Millar for his knowledge of colors. And I would have called that burgundy, but that's maybe because I like wine. I don't know.
It's from being an old pilot, because some things on your charts are in magenta.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, did you have a comment?
Well, actually, Mr. Buckman, so the words move from the end of document. Don't go there, right? We're deleting those. Okay. Okay, thank you.
I did make note of that.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I will bring it back to the board for discussion. Any further discussion?
This is all up to
you. Okay. Would someone like to make a motion on this?
I move approval of board policy 6142.1.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mr. Millar. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 10.04, proposed revisions to bylaws of the board, 9323 meeting conduct, first reading, and this will be Mrs. McGrath again.
Yes, thank you. The board subcommittee, as well as Ms. Eisendrath Rogers, reviewed your board bylaw 9323 concerning presentations to the board. So some adjustments were made. I would bring your attention especially to the second paragraph, where it adds the ability for someone in the public to use a district-supplied document camera in order to display materials. This would give someone the opportunity to have a digital display while not using a thumb drive or some other type of device that would have to be hooked into our network, which our IT department highly advised us against doing that. So as you know from your bylaw, in the past, people have always been able to hand out and distribute materials. This adds an electronic element so that a document camera that we're assuming would sit here, someone could place that there, and it would allow a digital display of that. So you can see the recommended changes there. It also notes that a different, non-district electronic device or camera should not be used, and allows some other additions here. After the subcommittee made these revised suggested changes, we did also run this by our attorney, who made some changes as well and adjusted our language. And so I bring this forward tonight for your discussion.
Great. Let's see. I have a couple of questions here. So in the first sentence, it says, a person wishing to be heard by the board shall first be recognized by the board president, and then shall proceed to comment. I would like to recommend that we say president or the designee, because that could include the clerk as well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we have sometimes the clerk does call on people. And then the second question I have is perhaps a little bit more technical, and I'm would be interested to hear the board's thoughts about this. It said any materials distributed or displayed by a member of the public is subject to the board president's ruling of the appropriateness of the topic in accordance with our bylaws. And my question is, if the presenter believes that it is and disputes the board president's ruling, is it appropriate for us to have an appeals process for that, or would that be something that would just be handled among the board members? Or is it the board president's sole discretion on this, or again, should there be an appeals process for somebody who feels that that the board president's ruling was wrong? I'm just asking that question.
I would say, yes. Go ahead, Kevin.
One thought I would have is that if the board president doesn't feel like that is something they want to make an individual decision on, it's something that could be brought to the board to make the decision at that point in time. That conversation could be had in the public eye. That wasn't considered here.
I would say just that one piece of input is from our attorney. He did mention that there is freedom of speech, right, in this type of format, and so that we should, obviously consider that. He did mention as well kind of this line here, I think, was one of his suggestions of within your jurisdiction of the board, right? So if someone wanted to come up and talk about they wish the color of the sky was different, and that's not necessarily within your jurisdiction, they sure could, and they can spend their 3 minutes talking about that, but it might be up to you to decide whether that was appropriate or not. Someone might also choose to put something that is distributed or a digital display that was obscene, and that might be up to you to decide, although he said just cautiously, no, this is freedom of speech, so you want to be careful about limiting that speech.
Okay. So
just a I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Anyway, so I'm sorry. So
and Catherine and Walter.
So one of the thoughts I'm thinking is, Chris, I don't know if this would help, but as we look at this and the appropriateness of the topic and the wording, I'm not sure, but and gives a specific reason. So it's lewd. It's inflammatory. Whatever it is. So that may stop. That may just be able to stop it at the point where the president wants to stop it, as opposed to having to come back to the board each time. Because I think there's certain words that we've seen in either this policy or in other policies where it's. I think the attorney's taken it directly from code.
Yeah,
or
we actually gave him that language, and that was one of the subcommittee's phrases that we wrestled with. And he said he would not recommend that language being in here, and actually suggested this language.
Okay. Thank you.
Walter and then Marilyn.
Well, first of all, I think we should make a distinction between the first part of the agenda for public comment, where the public has a right to comment on subject matters that are not on the agenda. And I think the controlling item is in that sentence that including whether the topic is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board. Some of you may remember when a person who will remain anonymous called for the impeachment of the vice president. Mm-hmm. So I actually brought that up at a CSBA conference, which are very helpful, even if we have to pay for hotel and food. And I said, a person wanted to impeach the vice president, and the presenters said, you mean the vice president of the board? And I said, no, the vice president of the United States. And the explanation was, that's not within the subject matter jurisdiction of the school district. Mm-hmm. So there are already limits to what a person can talk about in the first segment of public comment. Mm-hmm. Then, as we have done in the past, public comment on a specific agenda item is controlled to the subject matter of that agenda item. Mm-hmm. So I'm satisfied with this program. I'm not sure we need to do a whole lot of work on an appeals process for something that has never come up.
Okay.
But and there is an appeal process. You can always go to court and get a writ of mandamus if you don't like the board's ruling on things.
Okay. Mrs. Roger.
I'm not familiar with a writ of mandamus, but I really like the way it sounds, Walter.
It's a motion. It's a pleading that asks the court to order a governmental agency to do something.
It sounds painful.
I think it's important for us to make a decision on this. I recall during my board presidency that a person came up to the podium during public comment and spoke for 3 minutes on reproductive rights. And I was just shocked and didn't know what I should do at that point. So I think I really love the idea that we'll be clarifying this now, that the board president can say this is not within the, you know, this does not have to do with public education and therefore this comment is not appropriate for this forum or whatever. With Walter, I don't think that we need to have an appeals process. This is our meeting. But I would welcome clarification.
Okay. So, let's see. I just want to clarify, Mr. Millar, were you suggesting that we do bifurcate those two things or that we just continue the language as it is here?
You mean as far as the first comment, public
right.
comment?
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's been our pattern. Now, we have extended the courtesy to people who can't wait around for an agenda item to come up during the first public comment and say their piece. But again, it's restricted to subject matter jurisdiction of our board. And so I think we're doing it already. We're just making accommodation for people who can't stay later in the meeting.
So, again, my question, though, is are you recommending specific language in here to address that, or are you satisfied with the language as it is, since this is just the first reading?
I think I'm satisfied with the language. I think the subject matter jurisdiction piece that our attorney put in there helps us. Provides guidance as to, you know, how we should evaluate the appropriateness of something.
Okay, great.
I don't know.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, I just, this is a first reading, and I think we've started to look at these things and say let's let them wait until a subsequent board meeting and let people from the public have a chance to view it. And So I'm going to suggest that it'd be carried forward to the next board meeting for sure. Actual approval.
Yeah, and we haven't gone to public comment on this yet at all. So,
and just coattailing on Jim's comments, I think one of the things that the board could consider is sending this back to the subcommittee and/or the attorney, and then bringing that forward as part of the second reading. So, it's the pleasure of the board.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Well, I would just say if there's consensus on the board that there, you know, we're in agreement, I agree that it should come for a second reading. But if it goes back to the subcommittee to rework, then that's a first reading over again as far as I'm concerned.
Right,
so
and I
don't think that's necessary at this time based upon the comments I've heard from the board.
Okay, maybe I'm not hearing the same thing. So let me just clarify what I'm hearing so I get it right. I thought there was a need to come up with a statement here, and am I mistaken that we're all in agreement? I thought, Marilyn, you thought there, because of the reproductive rights, that we maybe needed something added here, or at least maybe just a list from the attorney or just some advice.
No, I think that that the board president, I guess the board would rely on his or her interpretation of whether the person's comments were going to be within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board. So I'm okay with the way this is written. I'm just glad to have clarification.
Okay.
In the bylaw.
Great. Then I'm fine with.
So.
But adding the.
Yeah, I would like to suggest that we add or designee on there. Would be my suggestion for Mrs. Holmes.
I think I could simplify that if we change the word president to the chair. And you don't, because whoever is running the meeting is the chair. So whomever you might have to designate that night would have that authority.
Right.
It wouldn't matter if it's the elected president or not.
My concern, though, is if the elected president's here, sometimes he or she will give that responsibility to the clerk, and I just wanted to make sure that we specify that.
Do you want to share that?
Yeah,
in
case we want the clerk to be doing the calling, and so that would be my suggestion. Okay, this is a first reading. I'm going to the public now.
I thought I should say something nice since I seem to have caused this whole situation. One question. This was not available to the public until, I don't know, Kim, when did I email you? By 10 o'clock this morning? Somehow it wasn't on the website, the policy. It just said meeting conduct. That's all it said. So there was no opportunity for the public to look at this.
It was improperly attached to the agenda item in the wrong place. So it was hidden from public view.
Well, it wasn't right. I couldn't see it when I went to the agenda. And I don't know if that means that by Brown Act you need to have another first reading. I don't know. But I would ask that as a question to be discussed. I have another question. Multiple pages. If we have multiple pages, how is that going to be dealt with?
Mrs. Holmes, would you set the timer, please?
And then is the speaker have to run to the document camera and change it and come back here? And if that is true, is there a way of having a microphone close to the pages so that there's not time wasted running back and forth? And then the third one is it said the board, it's at the last paragraph, and you can't see it behind this, but it says the board does not interact with speakers or members of the public, and the law doesn't allow them to discuss a non-agenda issue. I understand that during the beginning public comment, when it's not on the agenda, you cannot discuss it. Are you allowed, does this policy allow you to ask questions for clarification or have any interaction with the speaker at all if it is an agenda item? So that was my third question. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to say thank you for finding a way to make this work because I think it's important to have the visuals.
Okay, thanks. So we will at this point...
I'd just like to say, if I may, we do have a board policy regarding public comment, and there is a, how should we say, the ability for a board member to make brief comments or ask brief clarification questions. So, and that's covered in a different board policy.
Right. And one other thing to add to that, Walter, is the policy also says the board can ask staff to give a short response. So there is some possibilities.
Okay. So we will bring this back at the next meeting. Oh, yes. Did you have a...
Yes, I have a...
Can you please step up to the microphone? State your name for us, please.
My name's Nick Brake.
Thank you.
I had two questions on this. And I was wondering if the... not use district electronic devices if the microphone counted as an electronic device strictly under this policy. And then in a lot of other industries, when you're trying to give a presentation, you'll often, and even in industries with higher security requirements, when you're trying to give a presentation, you often hook be provided in an HDMI cable or method of hooking directly to the projector without having to go to provide a thumb drive. And then I think my other comment is if without access to basically direct access to projector, if the public would be able to email PDF versions of their presentation, and that way the board could bring them up, such that you could still maintain security, but be able to display the visual, display the data, because a lot of these conversations are so data-driven, to be able to present that data in a meaningful format.
Great. Thank you. Dr. Prater, if I may, or... So just to the board, I can't answer the first question, but the second question, I think the members of the public always have the right to email the board. That becomes part of the record in correspondence, and then those things could be referred to during public comment. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. So I think we have a consensus that we'll bring this back to the next. We'll bring this back to the next meeting, with the just the at least at this point with the addition of president or designee, And so we'll be done with that. Let's move on.
Chris, can I just, I'm sorry. Just
yeah.
My understanding, Kim, was during your presentation, you said that the document camera, and then you pointed to your right, that the document camera would be located to the right of the podium. Did I see that?
Right. I mean,
okay. Or left.
We'll see. Yeah. I didn't want to be presumptuous that you would approve this, so
right.
I will work with Jeremy and the IT department on implementing it, but we were hoping that it would not take away from someone's time, but just be a simple way to display something digitally.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to item 10.05, complete CSBA delegate assembly ballot. And that would be Dr. Prater.
Yes, I'm asking the board tonight to actually take action on a ballot that will go to CSBA, and this is for the delegate assembly that Mr. Buckman has represented on behalf of our district and in the county for quite some time. And he's on the ballot, and tonight is your opportunity to discuss that and determine an action for that particular ballot.
Okay. Is there any discussion before I, because I should go to the public on this, and I will. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing none, because this is an action item, I'll bring it back to the board.
I would like to thank Mr. Buckman for his service in this regard and support his continued service in this regard. So I will, after discussion is concluded, I would like to propose that we accept his ballot and support him, whatever we have to do here.
And I'll second.
Okay.
So well, I can third, can't I? Or,
please do.
So
sure.
No, I just wanted to say that I have dealt with one other of the candidates, and I also and know him quite well, but I will say this about Mr. Buckman. I think he's the most competent and the most experienced person to serve on this. So okay. I will second the second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We have the motion carries 6-0 with one abstention. Let's move on to item number 10.06, approved board member pay for permissible absence. Dr. Prater?
One of the permissible absences for missing a board meeting is illness. And Mr. Buckman at our last board meeting was ill. He's caught what has been going around. So I would like the board to accept this absence.
Okay. Is there any discussion from the public? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. And I will make the motion that we approve item number 10.06, board member pay for permissible absences.
And I will second.
I've made the motion. Mrs. Roger has seconded. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0 with one abstention. Let's move on to action consent. Please let me know if you'd like to. First of all, I'm going to go to the public to see if the public has any comments on this. Seeing none, I'm going to bring it back. Please let me know if you want to pull anything. Item number 11.01.
Pull.
Item number 11.02, 11.03, 11.04, 11.05, 11.06. And 11.07. Okay, so we need a motion to approve 11.02, 11.03, 11.05, 6, and 7. Would someone like to make that motion?
Also move.
Moved by Mr. Millar. Any second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mrs. Roger. Any discussion on those items? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Let's move on to item 11.01, Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. I'll make this as quick as I can. I just wanted to recognize that we have 15 of our experienced staff retiring, and that one of them, Laura Kirshner, was my former neighbor, who I think is a great teacher, and I just wanted to take the time to recognize those folks. So I move approval of 11.01. Thank you.
I'll second.
And we have a second by Mr. Quisenberry. So motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item 11.04. Mr. Millar.
I pulled this because I have to abstain. My wife works for PMSM Architects.
Okay. So Mr. Millar has asked that, has made that announcement. Would someone like to make a motion on 11.04?
I move approval of item 11.04.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Rogers, a second by Mr. Buckman. Any further discussions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? One abstention carries 6-0 with one abstention. Let's move on to item number 12. Any advanced agenda items? Mrs. Roger.
Oh, I'm sorry. My light's on in here.
Okay. Let's move on to reports by board members. Item 13.01. Mr. Buckman, I know you told me you have several things.
No, she hit the light first.
Come on, Mark. Go for it.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna shorten this down. I was one of the judges at the Loam Science Contest. It was amazing. The students, I learned more about microwave ovens than I ever want, but I'm going to be much more careful about using them. Attended the Central Coast Committee for Inclusive Schools, which is a group that supports LGBTQ students in their community. Also got to attend the ACLU workshop on LGBTQ students and inclusion. Let's see, skipping, Chris. I promised that I would do this, and I missed the meeting, I'm sorry. I attended the holiday store event at Hawthorne, and it was amazing because these kids came up with their own projects, they handled their own money, they made their own items, so I really felt it was a Common Core STEAM and CTA project all rolled into one, and I'd like to give a special shout-out to PTA leader and dad, Barry Warden. He was kind of running the whole event. Thank you.
Okay. Mrs. Shepherd.
I also, on a different day, served as a judge for the Los Osos Middle School Science Fair, and it was a great experience. So I wanted to thank the kids for educating me and thank my fellow judges who were scientists for their good work and devotion to the school.
And I forgot, I know Mrs. Sheffer, but I think the teacher was Dave Hoskins, and he was great, and the kids were very well prepared. So thank you, Dave.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
I had the opportunity to go to a boardwalk at Hawthorne, and Mr. McMillan was telling me about how he gives the teachers the opportunity to go into each other's classrooms and observe students as they interact with other students. And they have a grid which they're able to notate what they observe. And I even got to use the grid myself and go into a classroom. And it was Mrs. Shields. Thank you for doing this, Mrs. Shields. It helps the other teachers in the other classrooms be able to understand these students better too, but it also gives the teachers an opportunity to observe other teachers and in their own classrooms and what they're doing. And I enjoyed doing it and thought it was rather brilliant on the part of Mr. McMillan. So there you go.
Mrs. Rogers.
Thank you. Since we met last, I made a site visit to Monarch Grove Elementary School. I attended Dr. Prater's Student Senate, the ACLU LGBTQ presentation on rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer students in our district, and attended a boardwalk at Bishop's Peak School. Thank you.
Wow. So I was a busy boy, too. I visited the Monarch Grove Zoom After School Homework Club, the Baywood Science Fair. I was absent, of course, for the last meeting, but I did last week attend the NSBA, the National School Board Association Equity Symposium, and Legislative Advocacy Institute in D.C. I had a chance to speak to the House Education Committee staff, Nancy Pelosi staff, and then an individual meeting with our Congressman, Salud Carbajal, about education funding, special education funding, Title II teacher development funding, which is huge, and which is on the cutting block.
which is really unfortunate, because it absolutely supports teacher training, teacher learning, teacher retention and recruitment. We talked about CTE grants and the reauthorization of the Higher Education Act, which also relates to teacher recruitment and quality efforts. And then finally, I'd like to thank Dr. Eisendrath Rogers for inviting me to meet with members of the Leadership Slow class, along with Dr. Prater, Mr. Pinkerton, and we had an opportunity to talk about public education in San Luis Obispo County. You put together a great program, and I wanted to thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
And on that note, Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I just wanted to mention that I had the opportunity to do two things related to Morro Bay High School. Got to sit down with Annette Brunel, the ASB secretary, and discuss with her some interesting issues that came up in the past and may affect the future, and that is some kind of possible tutorial program done on a computer to let club advisors and coaches and so forth know how to correctly request, deposit, and keep track of their ASB funds. This has been an issue way in the past, but it is a huge issue, and so I'm hoping that does come to fruition. And then also James Bueno's class, the automotive class, I let them work on my car, and I'm pleased to report that they did a fine job. And I'll go into details if you would like that, but I'm not going to do that right now. But I'm really pleased that I got to see them at work and at the fantastic auto shop that's there at on campus. So.
And Chris,
of course. What Mrs. Brunel brought up with you about ASB and the reporting of funds and all of that, what was it? I lost
well,
you.
Well, we were going back through ancient history when I actually had to represent a teacher who was going to be reprimanded for the way they handled funds. And it was really something where no one had done any training. You know, there was an assumption that we would all know how to go through the ASB process of, you know, handling funds, cash boxes. I mean, now I know that's been reformed a great deal.
Was she aware of an available training?
No, I was talking about maybe that this could be a project for one of the classes, or I hadn't thought about it on the district level, but.
Well, if I remember correctly, since I've been on the board, the only thing that has ever come up in our audit, our annual audit, has to do with the handling of ASB funds. It may be something that that the district perhaps could provide some training on.
Annette and I kind of agreed on that it needs to be done. I don't know, but anyway.
We do provide training.
All right.
So I can give you a rundown on what that is.
Yeah, maybe, you know what, maybe that's something we could put in the Friday packet.
Yes.
Yeah, Friday notes?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Catherine, I think.
No, I don't.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just, I forgot this, and I just want to mention it. I was able to attend the superintendent's parent committee meeting. And I just really want to thank all the parents that show up. These are PTA presidents and booster presidents, and they do it once a month, and it's really wonderful that they're there. Thank you.
Okay. And I think that's it. We'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much. And our next meeting will be a Measure D study session this Tuesday.
Thursday.
I'm sorry, this Thursday. We will have closed session before that. So thank you very much. The next meeting will be 2:17 at Los Osos Middle School.